The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Good morning. Happy Monday. Thank you all for joining us on another episode of Bastards of Boston Baseball. On the podcast today, we have Charlie Smith from Way Out West, the City of Angels. Charlie, how are you doing and where can the fans find you?
Fans can find me at Smith_MLB. Was absolutely splendiferous, if that's even a word. What an awesome Father's Day for all the Red Sox dads out there. Fantastic.
Absolutely. It was a great weekend, a lot of fun things to cover that we'll be getting into today. Also joining us on the pod from the Grand Strand, aka Myrtle Beach, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you doing and where can the fans find you?
I am sunburnt as all hell, and I do this to myself every weekend. And it's weird. I don't know if you guys have this problem, but when I'm sunburnt to the level that I am, which isn't like severe, but it's moderate, it throws my body temperature off when I'm in the house. Like, I get cold in the air conditioning. I don't know what it is. I'm wearing a hoodie right now. So, but it's all good. I can be found at Cushman MLB. The podcast account is at Bastards_Boston. Find us on Instagram. We also have a blog. Search Bastards of Boston Baseball Substack. It'll come right up. We've got a piece on Verdugo going up shortly after this show, so it should be up for the listening audience by the time you hear this. So something we're trying to get more active in. It's kind of a panel style, so every host weighs in on whatever the topic is for like 2, 3, 4 paragraphs. And so it's blogging with a twist. Nobody does it like we do it. So find us on Substack.
Yes, please reach out to us. Please interact with us. We love all the content. And burnt, I think, is how the Yankees felt after this weekend, with the Red Sox taking 2 out of 1 in Fenway Park. Fenway seemed to be back like old times. The crowds were there. They were packed. They were loud. It was awesome. Taking a quick look at the standings, not much has really changed. Still in third place there, 12 games back from the Yankees, but just a little bit closer. Second place is the Orioles, a game and a half back from the Yankees. And in fourth place are the Blue Jays, a game and a half back from the Red Sox, and bringing up the rear are the Rays, a full 15 games back from the Yankees. But before we get into the weekend recap, let's do a quick temperature check. Charlie, how are you doing with the team today?
Well, I'll say this much. I was really happy that they were able to win the third game of the series. If you're going to win a game, I really don't like Marcus Stroman. I know he's blocked half the pod and he's blocked half of Twitter. So I'm happy that we won this one. So it's a pretty special one. So for dad, you know, thankfully we won. Thank the Lord. I'm feeling a little bit better, and I'm hoping that it's not false expectations, because there are some players that are doing things that I didn't anticipate, you know, becoming a reality. So what we've seen from certain players, and I don't want to, you know, drop names yet, but players that did not do well in the minors and then came up to AAA, still didn't do great, are all of a sudden blossoming in the majors. And I don't know if it's a combination of just being at the right place at the right time, or just teams haven't scouted players enough, but we're just, we're getting production from players that we never expected. And it's creating a, you know, for the lack of a better term, I'm going to say just like positive outlook on the season. And these games against the Red Sox and even before against the Phillies, there was a chance that we could have gone 0-6 and people would have said, told you so. But you take 2 out of 3 against the Yankees, a team that's the best team in baseball. We know them very well. They have 2 of the best hitters, if not the best 2 hitters in Major League Baseball. And you're able to take 2 out of those 3. You more than did your job. And, you know, for those that are doubters, raising my hand, you're starting to slowly make me feel a little foolish for doubting as much as I have. So credit the team for doing as well as they have. And they have certainly changed my outlook on where we should be right now.
Terry, what are your thoughts on the team?
So I'm not going to poo-poo everything. We did just take 4 out of 6 against the 2 literal best teams in Major League Baseball. I mean, the Yankees and the Phillies are going to the World Series. It's a done deal. They're going to the World Series. That's who it's going to be. And I know Charlie likes to push back a little bit, you know, because the Dodgers, well, Japanese Scherzer there. What's his name? Yamamoto,
he's out, and Mookie Betts broke his wrist today.
Yes.
I saw that on live TV. That was brutal.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel bad.
So, yeah. So, I wasn't sold on the Dodgers, but they're in rough shape at the moment, literally. So, but I just want to point out one thing here. If I'm going to poo-poo anything, it's going to be slightly this. The offense is red hot, and that's what won the week. You're having big contributions from some players we're going to get to shortly. I still have to be concerned a little bit about the pitching. You know, Bayo, not a great outing. It's just a continuation of basically a bad season at this point. His ERA is at 5. He's having a bad year. Cooper Criswell, 4 innings. Again, the offense made up for that. Not a big deal. We didn't pay for it. And, you know, obviously in the finale with Crawford, you're doing okay. Pivetta is coming off of a not-so-great start. 80 pitches through, like, 4 innings in his last outing. So the offense has got us there. And I just, if the offense cools down, then what's the trend as far as winning and losing? That's where I'm at. But we took 4 out of 6 against the 2 best teams in Major League Baseball.
Can I say one thing to that? There were things that certain players that we had expected on a series basis that for like a month just went dry. Players that were hitting home runs didn't hit home runs. Players that were stealing bases weren't stealing bases. Players that were getting on base at like stupid record clips weren't happening. So this series and the series before, you started to kind of see almost like the clock turn back to the month of April when we weren't taking these premier teams. But guess what? Now we are taking these premier teams and we're taking them to lunch. Like, I believe this is Cody's expression, where we packed their lunch for them. It was so visible in the 3rd game of the series. So I hear what you're saying, but I'm also going to keep my eyes open now, because 3rd game of this series, you had more than half your lineup with a multi-hit game. So that happened too.
Yeah, I mean, a temperature check really is just a spur of the moment, right? When you get your temperature checked at the doctor, it's how your body's doing at that point in time. And, you know, we're riding high, right? We just took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees, and we did it in resounding fashion. You know, there were tipping points at each point of those games. I thought we managed them and handled them beautifully, got out of some jams, and, you know, really kept the Yankees at tied, which, you know, obviously was the difference between winning those games and losing those games. And, you know, at the beginning of the week, at the end of the last podcast that I was on, I think all 3 of us predicted a Philly sweep, right? And we took 2 out of 3 from there. So hand up, all of us were wrong on that one. And we'll happily be wrong if that means we take 2 out of 3 out of the best team in the NL. But it was very conceivable that we look up at the end of this week and be like, man, we didn't win a game from Sunday to Sunday. And to sit here saying that we won 4 out of 6, we did it in resounding fashion, I think is just a great sentiment to kind of what we talked about on last Sunday's episode, which was this team fights and they never give up and they're trying to find different ways to get runs. They're trying to find different ways to get productions. And, you know, it's been a joy to watch. It's been a lot of fun to listen to. You know, the chaos that is constantly happening is both, you know, exciting and, you know, at times fear-inducing. But that's what you're going to get with a young team. You know, it's going to be some growing pains. And as Terry mentioned, right, you know, as he quote-unquote poo-pooed it, this team is going to have its highs and it's going to have its lows. And while April and parts of May were certainly highs, the other half of May and parts of June have been lows. And so, you know, we're kind of coming back to steady water. This is what feels like the perennial 500 team, but, you know, 4 out of 6 against 2 of the best teams just shows what this team is capable of when they are firing. So take it for what it is. And, you know, we'll kind of see what the next series brings. And, you know, we'll try to do our best to get the predictions in line to help the team continue to win. Terry, you had something you wanted to add?
Yeah. Let's just say that most of us, if not all of us, are going to be wrong about where we're at the deadline. Let's say we're 5 or 6 games above. Okay. And let's say they don't really add to the team. Let's not say anything, but it's going to be interesting to see the strategy, I guess, is where I should have went. Are we going to add? Are we going to do one of those half-ass? We're gonna move a couple of these guys, acquire some of those guys, and not really come out of it any better, at least for the second half of the season. So I'm just kind of curious to see what the strategy is. Because if you're 5 or 6 games above 500, you kind of have to go for it, right?
I think it'll be really dependent upon where we are in the wild card standings. Because 5 or 6 games above 500 with this team, with all the young talent on the roster, allows you the flexibility to be strategic and kind of do one of those 1-foot-in, 1-foot-out kind of trade deadlines that frustrates us to know all get out, or, you know, whatever saying you want to insert in there, right? But I think it's been pretty clear from the jump that this team has not been playing for a championship in 2024. From the front office down, that has not been the goal. They have not pushed the chips in. They have not made the moves. They have not made the commitment to try to go out and win a World Series this year. If we fall backwards into one, I don't think anybody's going to be like, oh, no, a World Series ring. But it clearly wasn't on the vision board for the calendar year of 2024. So, you know, with all of the players that we have that are contributing, maybe we can package them, get a couple of superstars. Maybe superstars is a bit lofty of a goal, but we could do some smart maneuvering, you know, some more financial footwork that this front office seems to be in love with at the moment, without necessarily selling the future away just to try to make a run for this year. When, to be honest with you, yeah, we might have, you know, shocked the Phillies and the Yankees this week, but you do that series 5 times, I don't know if we're getting 2 out of 3 on those series more than one time.
Well, I guess one of the things that kind of piques my interest is we had to listen to the rhetoric and the propaganda. We think this is a competitive team. We think it's going to surprise people. And then, lo and behold, that's what happens. We're competitive and we surprise people, and then we get stiffed. I just kind of... that's kind of what... I want to see. I don't want to see that, but that's kind of what I'm watching for as we get close to it. But, you know, July isn't quite as tough as June, and we're at this point, I would say, overperforming in June. So we'll just see where we're at, I guess, as we get closer.
A lot to break down, a lot to cover, and excited to see what the team does. But without further ado, taking 2 out of 3 from the Yankees over the weekend allows us to do studs and duds with studs first, a much preferred method, in my opinion. So, Charlie, why don't you kick it off with your stud for the weekend?
Absolutely. So my stud for this one was Jaren Duran. Jaren Duran had 2 multi-hit games in the series, going 5 for 12, 5 singles, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. Couldn't care less about the strikeout number when you're still doing what you were brought here to do. When you're getting almost a hit every 2 at-bats, you stole 2 bases, you're going kind of back to where you were in the month of April, because the month of May, we saw him steal 2 bases in total. He did that alone in this series. So I like to see Jarren Duran steal. He's one of the two people on this team that if he's on first base, you better pray that he's not looking at second base, because if he is, you've already lost him. He's just that fast. He's just that good. And his batting average is almost 400 right now, if it's not at 400. So before today's action, he was at 370. Obviously, we're not at 400 yet, but we're trending in that direction. We're getting on base two times a game, three times a game. We're drawing walks. We're doing the right things. And singles are turning into doubles for him because he's stealing bases. So I'm not upset if he only gets a single, because a single for me means you're already 180 feet away, or should be anyways, with his mentality. So I'm liking what he's been doing. He's really turned the page from a brutal end of May where he just didn't seem comfortable at all. Just one extra base hit for, I think, the last seven or eight games in May. It just was, not to say an out automatically, but I mean, the strikeout numbers were really, really high, and they're still not great in the month of June, but we're not nearly as bad as the month of May. So people have been dangling the idea of, oh, Jarren Duran, this is a possible trade candidate. And I think if you start talking about Jarren Duran as a trade candidate, one, you're going to tick off the fan base. Two, you don't know what it's going to do in the clubhouse. And three, and most importantly, how do you sell that you're trying if you're going to sell Jarren Duran? Okay, I get it. Cool. You're not going to win the World Series against the Phillies. Terry called me out for saying the Dodgers. I still think the Dodgers can crack the Phillies, baseball method of madness. And that's just me. Baltimore is Baltimore. Are you winning a World Series if you're the Boston Red Sox this year? No. Are you winning a World Series even if you add at the deadline if you're the Boston Red Sox? No. So do I completely blame you if you sell? Not completely, but I will say that if you do end up selling and, you know, you sell players like Jarren Duran, you sell players like Connor Wong, you're telling your fan base, we're not really trying for 2024, we're probably not trying for 2025, and, you know, stay tuned and we'll see you in 2027 or something like that. So it's a weird message, because not all rookies hit. That's the thing. You're hopeful. You know, Jason has talked about this on prior episodes. Jackson Holliday, the number one prospect, came up to the majors 2 for 34 or something with an RBI, sent right back down. And since he's gone down, he's been hot and cold with kind of, you know, a cold streak at the present moment. Will he heat up? Yes. Will he be bad the whole year? No. But to expect that all your prospects are going to hit and be all-stars is just not realistic. It is what it is. So my hope that is that, you know, if Jarren Duran is going to be somebody that you move, it's going to be really disappointing. Terry, there goes your jersey. You know, we've talked about that too, bud. You know, so it's just one of those things where it's going to be hard for me to, you know, think or even process that if we're trying to say that we're going to win. That's all I'll say.
Terry?
So in the last 15 games, Duran is hitting .355 with a .446 on base. If you want to cut that in almost half, he's hitting .414 with a .500 on base. And my big complaint through most of April and probably a big chunk of May, he's not drawing enough walks. Like, that's what's going to make him not only a complete hitter, but a complete leadoff hitter. Well, he drew 3 walks this series, and he's only 3 behind Devers, who leads the team. So Devers, 33 walks, Duran at 30. He's hitting .278 with a .348 on base. That's for the entire season. And, you know, if he's still here in August, and hopefully he will be, it'll be a big sigh of relief for me personally. Because like I said, I mean, I'm probably, you know, Devers is my guy, but I'm a huge Duran guy. Duran's like right there at this point. And when you're looking at Roman Anthony, your stud outfield prospect, what are the chances, as Charlie was alluding to, that he's going to give you this type of production. Like, Duran, let's see how many home runs. Five home runs. So you can't quite say he's a five-tool guy. Like, he's not a threat to leave the yard every at-bat, but he's a four-and-a-half-tool guy. And he just helps you win so many different ways. I don't know if Roman Anthony will ever be this good. And certainly not for the first year or two of his major league career. So I can't say enough good things about him. Duran had a really good interview with Buster Olney. Olney essentially asked him, you know, what do you want to see happen with the team between now and the trade deadline? And Duran was essentially like, that's not my job. I'm here to play baseball. That's what we're all here to do. And we're excited to be, you know, in the situation we're in. Like, the team's high right now. They're riding a high. Like, you can tell they're vibing. Despite any pessimism I want to give you, they are vibing right now. And, you know, Duran's a big part of it. And he might also become a bigger voice in that clubhouse as we go. That's a young clubhouse. I mean, just looking at the lineup thing here, Smith, Ref Snyder, and believe it or not, I think Devers is the exact same age as Duran. So only Smith, Ref Snyder, and I guess Yoshida, you could say. Those are the only people that really have age and tenure on Duran. So we'll see. I couldn't be more excited. And you're seeing a push right now. The All-Star situation for him is getting louder and louder by the day. So we'll see what happens. But he should be the starting center fielder for the All-Star team.
That would be electric to see. And, you know, with a player like Jaron Duran, I think electric is the best way to describe him. You know, while this team and this lineup might not have the, I guess, line of protection for Rafi Devers that we're used to seeing in Boston, players like Duran can offer that type of protection while being on base. You know, a pitch over once, twice, you know, he's going. Now the pitcher's rattled. Rafi's going to get a mistake. He's going to get a better pitch to hit. And we haven't seen a player like this, you know, with the type of dynamic abilities that Duran has since Ellsbury, you know, with that type of speed, with the constant look to second, turning singles into doubles, doubles into triples. And, you know, while he might not leave the yard, it's very surprising he hasn't had an inside the park home run yet. I mean, Duran, I think, is easily rising up the power rankings of favorite Red Sox players on the team. You know, he just shows up to the ballpark. He grinds it out. And it almost makes you wonder if he was battling something in the month of May, because two stolen bases is a laughable amount of stolen bases for a guy with his type of speed who's always looking to get that extra 90 feet. So, you know, it's good to see him back to his running ways. I don't know what was going on with May. Maybe it was a blip, like Charlie likes to say. Maybe, you know, it was a different type of strategy that they had seen. Better pop times on opposing catchers. I'm not really sure, but, you know, the offense is definitely clicking right now, and I think a lot of that starts with the table setter. And Terry, as you mentioned, his on-base percentage and his batting average are up. They're going to the moon. Charlie said that it's, you know, close to 370, I think it is right now, probably over his last 15, if not 30. He's definitely raised his average a lot very recently, you know, and if he can draw those walks like Terry said, or, you know, make that contact a little bit more consistent, then I think we're really cooking with gas at the top of the order with a player like Jaron Duran, because I think that's kind of the one thing that's really lacking from his game, because we see all the tools, we see all the production. It's just, can he do it consistently, right? Because, no, granted, the highs of his outputs are very, very high. And I don't think we're expecting that on a consistent basis. But, you know, let's try to avoid that floor a little bit more. Yeah, Terry?
Yeah, just real quick. So in regards to his lack of stolen bases, that was something I questioned, and I even did it in a tweet, and someone came at me with a quote from an Alex Speer article in the Boston Globe that Alex Cora wanted Duran to kind of tone it down a little bit. And I don't know if he's worried about, you know, injury possibilities like a hamstring. It didn't really it didn't really get into it that much, and none of the other beat writers really covered it. So it's just kind of weird to me. You know, you need him getting to second base. If Duran is on second base with no outs, he's coming home. It's almost a given that he's coming home in that half of the inning. So it's just so critical to winning to have him do that.
Yeah, we have a lot of players on this team that can manufacture runs in ways that we haven't really had in years past. And, you know, Terry, like you said, if Duran, amongst others, are standing on second base with no outs, I mean, they're literally creating runs on their own. And it is just so much nicer to have offensive production top to bottom through different ways and not just waiting for the three-run home run or, you know, the bases clearing double. It's been very fun to watch. Anything else that either one of you gentlemen wanted to add on Jarren Duran? Nope. Terry, why don't you go next with your stud for the weekend?
So I don't usually talk about this area of the team in this segment. They're more for honorable mentions, but in my opinion, where game three got won was when Zach Kelly came in to bases loaded, no outs, and gets out of it. And it was a one-run game. So if one run comes home, that's it. And the fortunate thing for him was he faced Gleyber Torres, got a strikeout, and what was a little bit fortunate because the final strike strike three, essentially, that Torres swung at was down in the dirt. It should have been ball four. But Torres not having a good year. Yankees fans are really frustrated with him. They seem to be pretty anxious to move on from him. But nonetheless, Kelly gets the strikeout there. Then he gets Trevino, who just seemed completely lost the whole at-bat. Just got him chasing sweepers, essentially. And then, still, you know, two outs at this point. DJ LeMahieu comes up. So this is the 7th, 8th, and 9 hitters. And LeMahieu flied out to end the inning. And you could just see how fired up Kelly was as he left the mound. And you see that with some guys. Pivetta gets fired up, and it's kind of fun to watch. He also pitched two innings in game one. That was kind of a losing effort, though, by that point. But still, two innings, no hits, no walks, struck out three in that appearance. So he's got his ERA down to 1.88. And coming into the year, I think he had an injury last year, missed most of it, and came into this year, and I didn't really have the highest of expectations. It was just kind of a wait and see. I wasn't pessimistic at all. He's a young pitcher, and he's been good. He's been pretty solid. I think he had a couple of blips within his first handful of outings, and I think he was kind of getting away with some stuff, though, so you know, the box scores won't really reflect that, but he's been lights out for much of the last month. And this was his fourth hold on the season, and can't help but be more impressed. And you know, you're losing Kenley, whether he gets traded or just walks at the end of the year. You're probably losing Chris Martin, who, by the way, is going to rehab. So I think looks like the anxiety thing seems to be under control. But he's going to have probably just one rehab outing. But you're losing those guys, so you're trying to figure out what that back end of the bullpen will look like. And it's hard to imagine Zach Kelly isn't going to factor into that in a big way. Whether it's the eighth or ninth inning will remain to be seen.
Charlie?
I mean, how do you sum up not being a stud when you come in, bases loaded, first batter you face, the first three pitches you throw are out of the zone, I thought the third one was a strike, but whatever. Out of the zone. You got the bases loaded. You got 3-0 on your batter, and you rally back and you strike him out. You strike out Trevino, who's just having an awful day behind the plate batting. I mean, at this point, it's just he's been boom or bust. He's been terrible. And then you get LeMahieu, who's just due. And the pitch that he lined out on was right down the middle. I mean, he just needed to hit that a tad later or a tad earlier, and we're no longer leading this game. We're down by two. So luck went our way. Kelly reaped the benefits of it, totaled 5 strikeouts in 3 innings. His first appearance that he had in that first game, only threw 3 balls. He threw 21 pitches in all and was just on it, just flat on it. And at the end of the day, there are going to be only so many appearances where you actually can get everything locked on. And this will probably be one of the only times in his career that he'll be able to say, yep, entered a game with the bases loaded, no outs, and didn't allow a run against the best team in baseball. This might be his only time that he does it. It's just, it was incredible to see. It was incredible to watch. Admittedly so, my, you know, future father-in-law was like, you want a drink? I was like, yes, please. This could get bad. And Zach Kelly completely flipped it around, and we're out of the jam. It was incredible. Just incredible.
Not much really to add upon that. You know, it's the second consecutive game where it was kind of hanging in the balance, and we really, what feels like, stole one. You know, I know that we had the lead, we were protecting the lead, but time and again, we've seen that go the wrong way for the Red Sox, right? You know, an unproven guy or a guy that's been riding high on the season. We had Bernardino in to start. Obviously, that went sideways. And for, you know, Kelly to come in, lock it down, and do it so in such a convincing fashion, and I think is all the more worthy of being on the stud list. And, you know, Charlie, as you mentioned, LeMahieu was due, is due, is a Red Sox killer. I mean, the guy has been nothing but superb for the Yankees ever since he came over. And, you know, he's not your traditional 9-hole hitter, right? He's definitely under that Joe Maddon analytics style baseball where they're putting an extra leadoff guy in the 9-hole spot to turn that line over a little bit quicker. So that way, you know, the top of the order might have a couple extra base runners on it. That's how I still kind of view LeMahieu, even if the numbers and the productions don't match. But I mean, what Kelly did today was nothing short of a miracle, right? I know it's 7-8-9 for the Yankees, but they're still the Yankees. They got 50 wins for a reason. That lineup is deep, top to bottom. The guys are producing. You don't get to 50 wins the way that they have without getting contributions up and down the lineup. So a very worthy stud for the weekend. And, you know, to have that be in game 3 of all, just to walk out of that series with an overall victory, I think is extra, extra big. Terry, something to add?
Yeah, I was just kind of looking through, you know, his career, and I don't see any information about him being drafted at all. I mean, the first time he was picked up was in 2017, the Oakland Athletics. They released him basically a year later, and then picked up by the Angels for a couple of years, never made his major league debut with any of those organizations until 2022 with the Red Sox. And we actually picked him up in December of 2020. So he's made his debut with us. He's 29 years old, you know, which is up there. Not quite Ryan Brazier territory, who was, I think he's 36, 37 years old right now and got to us in his age 32 season. So we'll see. Did you have any info, Charlie?
Sorry, quick glance. I thought you were talking about DJ LeMahieu. You're talking about Zach Kelly.
Oh, did I say LeMahieu? That's like the most random name ever. Yeah, I was talking about Zach Kelly that whole time.
Okay, cool. Because I was going to say, Zach, he was drafted twice, obviously didn't sign his first time, but once I was listening to you, and I apologize, you're talking about Zach Kelly. I honestly don't know. I don't really remember him outside of a little bit of last year, but he also pitched 22 as well. And there isn't too much on him. He's 29 years old. He, you know, to your point, does not say where he was drafted. I can't find that either. So I'm with you on that one too. We're aligned.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they pluck these guys. He could have been in an independent league and got plucked out of that. And so we can probably, that info probably is out there, and we can, we'll be more prepared for it if we talk about him fairly soon.
Very well. Any other tidbits or information that we want to discuss about Zach Kelly? No? All righty. Then we will move on to the final stud of the stud segment. And for me, it's Kenley Jansen. I know he only had one appearance, four out save, eighth and ninth inning in game two. The reason he's my stud is this is a guy that I was kind of giving it to pretty bad at the beginning of the season. I felt like he had already quit on the team before the season even started. He was taking off days. He was only, you know, kind of picking and choosing his spots to come in. But he called down to Alex Cora and said, hey, bring me in this game. You know, I can get these guys out. I can, you know, essentially lock this one up for us. Obviously, the team went out and scored some more in the bottom of the eighth to give us some insurance. But that was another one of those moments where, you know, there was bases were, you know, full. I believe it was Weissert on the mound, if I'm not mistaken. And we really needed to get out of that jam. We had just taken a thumping the day before. You know, we were clinging to a one-run lead at the time. And Kenley came in and shut the door, you know, 1.1 innings, you know, no walks. And over his last 15 appearances, 2.76 ERA, 11 innings, 21 strikeouts, 7 saves out of 7 opportunities. And so, you know, he's been nothing short of everything that we could have hoped for, everything that we would have wanted to sign up for. And he's kind of emerging as that leader we had hoped he would be at the beginning of the season for the guys in the bullpen and for the young members on this team. So, and I got to give credit where credit's due. He stepped up to, you know, to the call this time, right? I guess he made the call, but it was great to see. And, you know, I got to eat my crow for saying that I was out on Kenley Jansen, because if he's going to continue to do moves like this, help the team like this, I'm back in. Charlie?
Yeah, Kenley was doing Kenley things. At the end of the day, he's, you know, one of the best closers in baseball, has and will be one of the top four, top five guys with saves at the end of his career. I'm super happy to see him actually raise his hand and say, yeah, have me come in the eighth inning, because that's not been something that he's been doing. What else is there to say? You know, like, if this team's doing well, he's happy, things are going great. This is his best ERA in 3 years. You know, he's obviously better this year than last year. And I'm really curious to see if he can continue building on this, because, I mean, last season he only had 29 saves so far. We're at 11. So, yeah, I mean, he's got a chance to maybe hit 30. There's going to be an opportunity for saves, and when they do, it should be his number that gets called. So super excited to see him do what he did.
Terry.
I don't think he's ever going to win me back as far as, you know, the character part of it. Having said that, I'm not a Kenley hater. I'm just mildly annoyed. And it's just hard to win me back at this point. Having said that, and I think I've talked about this within the last week or so, quietly, he's put together a pretty good year. And for being injured basically the whole spring, I mean, I kind of would have given him a pass, you know, just for that. I mean, you can't help the injury part of it, whether I like him or not. And despite that, I mean, he kind of did get pretty lucky. He got bailed out quite a bit in April, but still, after that, managed to rein it in. He's kind of restored that trade value that we were all hoping he would do. And I don't know what the return would look like, but I think I was listening to, might have been Ken Rosenthal, and he expects the relief market to be robust at the end of July. So you would think Kenley would factor into that. And I think Breslow botched it this winter. I mean, there were a number of creative things he could have done in terms of trading Kenley. I just want him to get the best package. I hope we're not fixated on money at this point, the other team eating a certain amount of it. I want the best trade package possible for Kenley Jansen, and I don't care what the circumstances are to get that package. So I hope that's the mindset. And, you know, if this offense is hot, I mean, well, maybe he won't get the the save opportunities. I don't know. He was warming up today in the finale, but then Connor Wong cleared the bases with a triple to, I think that went out to right field. Verdugo couldn't come up with it, and it was a tough play. But there was really no need for Kenley at that point. It was 8-3. Red Sox actually tacked on one more. But yeah, but Kenley is in a good rhythm right now.
He really is. And just, you know, kind of knowing that that's lurking out there in the bullpen for when we need it has been like an antacid for the Red Sox viewing experience, right? And so, you know, it's just credit where credit's due. This is a guy that I had written off as Terry had mentioned, you know, somebody that I think a lot of us had a lot of frustration with the way that he was approaching this team so early on. But, you know, to see him kind of have the season that he's having and to start doing those semi off the field moves, like, you know, inserting himself in a game when the team really needed him, I think was very big to see. But Terry, who do we have for honorable mentions for this weekend?
We'll start on the offensive side. David Hamilton, just 2-for-9, but was a base stealing fiend, especially in the finale. I'm not going to mention this other guy. Devers 2-for-10. He did draw three walks. Not a terrible series. Drove in two runs here in the finale. Wong, as I said, cleared the bases, basically put the finale out of reach, was 4-for-9. Drew a walk in all three games, just continuing to be a top three or four catcher right now in Major League Baseball. And JT Realmuto is out, so that kind of bumps him up one for the time being. Realmuto, I think he's going to have a minor knee surgery, and he probably already did, in fact. And I guess he's only going to miss a month, which kind of surprises me. But nonetheless, Emmanuel Valdez is a totally different player since getting called up. And I don't know if this is a new thing or if it's just a hot streak, but it's one of those things, you'll take it. He drove in exactly one run in all three games, in each of the three games, I should say. So three runs over the course of the series. 3-for-6, only two strikeouts. Pretty good series for him. And finally, Seidon Rafaela has got his batting average up to .238 right now. 7-for-14 against this Yankees staff. And I mean, we faced arguably their three best with Cole not quite being back. He might be back in his very next start, but Luis Gil, Carlos Rodon, and Marcus Stroman, and those are three really good pitchers, and he's put up some pretty good numbers. And in the finale today, the Yankees got a quick 1-0 lead thanks to an Aaron Judge home run. Just a towering moonshot. It didn't have a ton of distance, but it had some hang time. They said it was like 7 seconds in the air. That's that's a ball that's hit pretty high. I think it had a 45-degree launch angle, and you don't see those are fly balls everywhere. Like, most of the home runs, and I only learned this from the home run derby last year, the launch angle for most home runs, if you hit it at least like 98 miles an hour with a 25-to-35-degree launch angle, those are the ones that go out. So for it to be 45 degrees, I mean, that was insane. But Judge got them on the board 1-0, and then Red Sox strung together some hits. There were runners on second and third, and Rafaela ripped a single to Aaron Judge out in center field, and that made it a 2-1 game, and we were essentially off to the races at that point. So it's worth keeping an eye on. Draws zero walks, which I hate to see, but he's making it work, and quite frankly, what he's doing now is fine for the bottom third of the order. If that's where he's going to hit, you're just going to take that production anyway. selfishly, I'd like the walks to come because, I don't know, I think he's a future one or two hole hitter. I mean, that's what everything else seems to profile. Rob Refsnyder has consistent 333 average self, 2-for-6. Drew 4 walks as well. So continuing to be one of the better fourth outfielders in Major League Baseball. We'll get over to the pitching side here of honorable mentions. Not really a stellar series at all, really, outside of, I guess, Weissert. Slayton got tagged for a run. That was over 2 2/3 innings, though, so I guess I shouldn't get on him for that. Boozer came in just to face two hitters in game one, but that was a losing game. So the pitching, there was a lot of meh there. Well, obviously, and then Cutter Crawford. I don't know what I'm thinking here. 6 innings, only 3 hits, 3 earned. 2 of those runs came via the long ball. Judge, like I said, and then Trevino hit just a missile over that monster. And then just 1 walk, 9 Ks. He had a pretty good outing against the Phillies, so if you want to be an optimist, you can say he's back. But Charlie...
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. So last start, he had a season-high 8 strikeouts and then had a hold-my-beer moment with 9 strikeouts against the Yankees, against the best team in baseball. The fun thing about it is that he's now faced the Phillies and the Red Sox, and the Yankees, and he's done actually pretty good in the strikeout department while limiting the damage. All of these earned runs are solo home runs for the most part, you know, solo shot. So he's doing a really, really good job of limiting the total amount of damage. And what I really like is his last 2 performances, each 1 walk. And what I love above all else, he finally got a win. You know, this is the first win he's had since May 1st. So, you know, it's been a tough year to be a Cutter Crawford supporter because things have just gone wrong pretty regularly. And it's just nice to see him, you know, have that run support because on a consistent basis, he'll sometimes allow 2 earned runs, 1 earned run. And start of the season, he went 5 straight games, allowing 1 run or less, and he didn't register a win except for that 5th game. So he went 1-0 to start the season when he probably should have been 5-0. So the team has just not been able to rally and get runs for him when he starts. So this is a really nice, positive finish because this is the first win the Red Sox have had when he has started in 8 starts. Brutal.
About time we picked him up too, right? Terry, any other honorable mentions? I know that there was a litany of honorable mentions this time.
Yeah, I think that about covered it.
Alrighty, then we will kick it over to the less fun side of things. Charlie, why don't you start us off with your dud for the weekend?
Yeah, so I don't believe I've ever done the, you know, well, for my dud this week, I'm actually picking the manager or I'm picking the owners of the Boston Red Sox. This is, I think, and I could be completely wrong. If I am, call me out. This is actually going to be a Jose Trevino dud performance for me because as easy as it could be to pick somebody who went 0-3, 0-4, 1-7, Yoshida 1-10. Jose Trevino for the New York Yankees allowed a Red Sox record 9 stolen bases in the 3rd game. He allowed none in the first 2. So I don't know what it was that they picked up on, if it was a combination of him and Marcus Stroman together, but he went 2-for-8 in this series, had 2 home runs, both solo shots, committed 2 errors, threw down a second, did not get it. I think it was on Jaron Duran. He tried throwing out Jaron. And Jaron ended up advancing to 3rd base. It was just, I mean, a mind-blowing performance. Like, even Dominic Smith, who runs like a piece of furniture. It's just insane. Hamilton had 4 stolen bases. Smith had 1. Duran had 2. Rafaela had 1. So Duran had 2. Rafaela. Oh, Dalbec was the 9th one. So, I mean, everybody jumped in on the fun here. It was insane. It was like, have a stolen base if you're feeling it. And Hamilton is just, Hamilton, he's just going to keep doing what he's doing. But for me, I just felt it. It was so insane to see, the Red Sox have, stolen 7 games for the first time since 1940 or 1960. I actually took a picture of it because I was in such shock. Let me see if I can find it. Give me one beat here. 7 stolen bases, most since September 29th, 1940. And then moments later, 8 stolen bases, tying a franchise record. And I think it was David Hamilton who stole the ninth bag for the Red Sox and set a Red Sox record. So in a season where so much has not really gone the right direction, this has been super fun to see not 1, not 2, not 4, not 6, not 8, but 9 stolen bases in one game. You would have thought that the Boston Red Sox are the fastest team in baseball. But for me, I mean, when you get 3, 4, 5 guys or 3, 4, 5 attempts on you, they're really questioning you as a catcher. And Trevino just had an awful day behind the plate. I don't remember the last time I've seen 7 stolen bases in a game. I remember years ago when Carl Crawford stole 6 bases against us. I don't remember what day it was. I can look it up. And I don't remember how many bases there were stolen against the Red Sox that day. It might've just been Crawford, but he stole 6. And I sat there thinking, oh my God, this is insane. 6 stolen bases in a game, and the Boston Red Sox stole 9. So for me, Trevino, dud of the series, just because you could not keep players from turning singles into doubles. Done.
Terry.
So do you guys know when the previous record was set before we broke it tonight?
1940 was when we were 1 away, or that was the most since we've done 7. I don't remember when we did 8.
So with this next to last steal tonight was when we tied it. That record was set in 1940, 84 years ago. Ted Williams was 21 years old that year. It was his second season in the majors, his first year as an all-star. That's how long ago it was. My grandmother was 22 years old at that time. And so what a night to be on the wrong side of history for Trevino. And it doesn't look like there were any stolen bases. He played game 1, and it was Austin Wells that caught for them in game 2 on Saturday. But so when you're asking, is it a combination between Stroman and Trevino and that's what led to it? It could be. Perhaps they found something, during the game on Friday. I don't know. But it was a terrible performance. And I know we had some issues with Reese McGuire last season, and they were able to kind of rein that in. So I don't know if that was a mechanical thing that he just kind of was able to improve, because McGuire's been gunning people down this year. I don't know what the steal rate is on him, but it is what it is. And everybody, David Hamilton, I think, stole 2 or 3 bags tonight. Go ahead, Charlie.
So I wanted to go back to that point that I was talking about. Carl Crawford stole 6 bases. This is back in 2009. The Tampa Bay Rays stole 8 in that game. That was back when, here we go, Evan Longoria was still a Ray. We had the lineup including Jason Bay, J.D. Drew, Yukelis, Ortiz, Pedroia, Ellsbury. Tech was still your catcher. Julio Lugo was your shortstop. That was the last time I remember 8 and we did 9 today. That's going to be another fun little activity to see when's the last time that the Red Sox had 9 stolen, nine stolen bases against them. I don't know if it's ever happened. It's insane.
I don't remember. The Crawford one has to be the most recent for that number.
I mean, there were seasons in which the Red Sox had more caught stealings than stolen bases in the 90s and the early 2000s. This is historically a team that just doesn't run. And, you know, there were runs that were literally manufactured by stealing bases. I think Hamilton stole second and third and then scored either on a single or a sacrifice fly. I can't remember, but all I know is when you're setting records that were set in the dead ball era or shortly thereafter, that's got to be something crazy, right? Whenever you get, this is the first time this has been done since, you know, old Curly in 1910 or, you know, whatever it ends up being, you're like, wow, this is a pretty special statistic because the baseball statistics back then were absolutely wild. It's a tough day at the yard for Trevino. They had mentioned on the broadcast that, you know, Stroman was pretty slow. He'd been working out of the stretch for most of the day. So, Charlie, I think you nailed it on the head there by saying they might have picked up on something between the cadence and, you know, his move to first or his move to home and then a slow pop time or just they couldn't get a good grip on the ball or something. I don't know. But 9 stolen bases is incredible. And to have it happen against the Yankees, I think, is just icing on top of the cake. Terry, why don't you hit us with your dud for the weekend?
It was a tough one for me between two players, and literally as recently as like 10 seconds ago, I'm like, do I want to pivot and go with the other guy? I don't know. But I'm going to stick with the reliever aspect. And Brennan Bernardino wasn't good tonight. He basically put those three runners on that led to Zach Kelly coming in, bases loaded, no outs. Our old pal Alex Verdugo hit a single right away, opposite field. And love him or hate him, he still puts together a great at-bat. And in his very first at-bat in the series, 2-run bomb to straightaway center. But he got on, and he's a guy that when things are going well, he's going to make things happen. Giancarlo Stanton kind of ripped a ground ball also opposite field up between the first and second baseman. So now there's two on. And then Anthony Rizzo reaches on an error, then hurts himself. It wasn't a good outing from Bernardino. And if you go back to last weekend against the White Sox, he pitched 1 1/3, but gave up 4 hits and 2 walks. So it's only 2 out of his last 3. He's got an ERA of 0.98. Still a fantastic season based on the metrics, but you're just wondering, will this guy ever come down to earth, or is he just a stud from out of nowhere that's just going to be a factor, you know, in the mid to late innings, especially being a lefty. But it just not a good outing today from Bernardino. And hopefully this doesn't become a trend.
Yeah. So Bernardino in this series only, I think, pitched on record a third of an inning and threw, you know, 15 pitches and whatnot. But the issue that I had was the, I don't know, borderline unnecessary. I mean, I'm going to counter what you're saying because I don't think Anthony Rizzo hurt himself. I'm just going to be open and say that Bernardino kind of got in the way. And it kind of did look like a hip check. I'm not going to lie. It looked, I call it like it is, man. I'm all about it. Like, I'm calling people out online for their support of certain players that are just dirty in all sports, Major League Baseball, international soccer, football, baseball, WNBA. I don't care. You don't like it, kick rocks. That didn't look clean. I'm just going to be honest about it. It looked like he kind of went into Rizzo, and that's what, you know, Rizzo's not a small dude. Rizzo's a big guy, and he's not athletic. So yeah, of course he's going to get, you know, ripped up. And it also looked like he hurt his wrist as well. It just not a really good look for Bernardino or the Red Sox in that moment. Yeah, it is what it is. One other thing I want to add to Trevino that I didn't mention earlier, he blocked the plate, preventing Jaron Duran from scoring. And I thought that was as clear as day, that I thought that was supposed to be safe because there was no clear line to scoring on that play. In the bottom of, I think it was the eighth inning. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but that did not look like he had a clean path because Trevino was right in the base path. Like, he was doing anything possible to look relevant because he's just been striking out, for the lack of a better term, in every capacity. But yeah, I digress.
It has been a tough go for Bernardino the last couple of outings. And I think, you know, that's why we got to give Kelly even more love for that stud pick, right? Because, you know, you have Bernardino, who's uncharacteristically wild. The bases get loaded. He has an injury on a bobbled play. And you're like, oh man, here we go. Here it comes unraveling. You know, we could kind of see the writing on the wall. But it is, you know, it is really unfortunate. Hopefully Bernardino gets well soon. Hopefully it's nothing major if it is an injury. And, you know, maybe he's just getting overworked, or he's worked in too many high leverage situations and he just kind of needs one of those phantom 10-day IL stints with an oblique injury just to kind of reset and get all the way back. The guy's been nothing but a grinder for us. We've put him, you know, in the opener. We put him in the long relief. We put him in high leverage, basically everything but closing. And he's done nothing but surprise us. I also think he might have been, you know, suffering from the announcer's jinx, because I think he went like 31. I want to say it was like 31 appearances that were scoreless, or like didn't allow a inherited runner to come in on like 36 runners or something like that. I can't remember the exact statistic, but I think a runner scored shortly thereafter. So hopefully we're flushing that out. It's a small blip and we'll get him back to where he should be. Kerry.
Yeah, so the thing I just kind of noticed over the last week is they're timing it, you know, against lefties. If there's a chance where there's going to be two out of three, he's going to get that inning, short of necessarily the eighth or the ninth. But it just seems like lefties aren't chasing that sweeper anymore. And hopefully he's got a counter move to that. And if he does, he should be fine. I noticed with Kelly, they weren't chasing, well, a couple of them weren't chasing his sweeper, so he switched to his cutter and then, you know, was getting the strikes on that. So we'll see. It's only a couple outings, but it's a little bit concerning.
Definitely something to monitor and hopefully just not a trend. Anything else that you gentlemen wanted to add on Bernardino? Nope. Then we'll move it on to the final dud of the evening. We'll keep it short. We'll keep it sweet. And hopefully that is indicative of his time remaining on the Red Sox. But the dud that I had is Dominic Smith. 1-for-7, only played 2 out of 3 games, 1 single, 3 Ks, almost a catastrophic error on what was a tailor-made, you know, double play ball. Maybe not tailor-made, but definitely could have been turned if it was clean, bobbled it, then tried to go to first, kind of threw the ball wayward to Bernardino, leading to the collision. Dirty or not, tough to say, but just hasn't been getting it done. A guy that I sung the praises of literally 7 days ago for, you know, hitting it a little bit better, playing some good defense, and it all kind of came unraveling in this series and almost cost us the game and the series win. I think the temperature check for this episode would be a lot different if we had lost 2 out of 3 versus winning 2 out of 3, obviously. And that play kind of been a pretty big part of that. So hopefully Costas is going to get back soon. I know that he's already starting baseball activities. I think he's doing dry swings. He's not hitting the ball yet, but Grissom's on the mend. Roman Gonzalez is on the mend. Yoshida's back already. Martin's doing rehab assignments. And I think Abreu is going to go for one soon. So this team is going well and they're only going to get healthier. So maybe, you know, Smith's time on the team is in fact limited, but he is my dud for the weekend.
He's been a dud for a month. I mean, he's just, what are we doing? I mean, the only good thing is that he doesn't strike out all that much, but I still really can't get over that post game interview where he said, like, I don't remember the exact verbiage, but I'm not trying to get my arm ripped off. So you're not trying to be a major leaguer. you're trying to be a little leaguer or not put your, you know, put your body on the line for the team that's, you know, defending you and trying to make it look like you deserve to be on this team. You would be playing for exactly zero teams if the Boston Red Sox didn't need you right now. You are a zero offense. You're a zero ad. And on top of all that, you can't run the bases. That was the ugliest stolen base. If you guys haven't seen it yet, go replay. Go watch that stolen base again. It was awful. It was so terrible. Embarrassing. I don't want to waste any more time on Dominic Smith. You know, 1-for-7 was probably a blessing. Stolen base because Trevino is having the worst game of his life. Score a run. Just, oh, God, I'm so over him. Next.
Terry.
One of our frequent, one of our frequent followers on Twitter that engages with us quite a bit, especially on the Hot Takes episodes, Johnny Fontaine. Charlie mentions the arm ripped off comment, and Johnny Fontaine says tonight on one of our threads, his excuse this time might be that there was an earthquake or a tidal wave or something. So we don't have the same post game coverage on ESPN that we have on Nesson. So I don't have any quotes from him if there are any, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens here because Dalbec clearly isn't going anywhere for some reason that probably doesn't make sense, but he's not going anywhere. When Romy Gonzalez comes back, I wonder if he takes over at first on the games that Dalbec doesn't play because they're not taking Valdez out of the lineup as hot as he's been. So he's going to get the starts at second. Hamilton has played outside of the month of April, has played a adequate shortstop. And you're not taking that bat out of the lineup. I mean, he's basically been your best hitter in a month. I mean, Duran's like right there now, thanks to a really hot series. But Hamilton's hitting over 300. So I don't think you really want to mess with your middle infield there, barring lefty starters. So what do you do with Romy? I think possibly he becomes your first baseman. Now, the only bugaboo there is he gets hurt every seventh game. So that's the risk you're going to take. But is Dom Smith a make or break guy? I mean, you can solve that. You can get another guy off the scrap heap if you have to. So we'll see, but I'm getting tired of it. And we did a very extended segment on Dominic Smith on the Clown Takes episode covering his quotes and all that from that blunder he had last week. So check that out if you haven't already. But other than that, I got nothing else.
I mean, he was good enough when Casas went down and, you know, we didn't have an immediate replacement, but he definitely hasn't had the production with the Red Sox like he has had in some other stops. So, you know, it was a reasonable experiment at face value, I think, but it just, you know, hasn't really clicked. And, you know, you wish him the best, but hopefully he, you know, finds greener pastures. Anything else that you gentlemen wanted to add on Dominic Smith? Yeah, Terry.
I was just going to mention with Casas, they're really not talking timetables. He did kind of say he thought he could be ready by July 1st. I think that's out the window at this point, and he's kind of pushed back on that. It's a tough spot. You know, that rib cartilage doesn't heal easily. And so we'll see. I mean, I think you're happy if you have him back by August 1st at this point, but, what's that?
Yeah, I was going to say he was entertaining as hell in the third game of the series. I think he took three breaths the entire time he was talking, and they even commented on, they're like, wow, you got like amazing breath control. Like you just keep talking. You don't stop. So, I mean, I think if there was like silver lining on the situation with Tristan Casas, you just have to say, he sounds like he's doing better. Like mentally, he's there. It's just we're waiting for the physical part to match that mental that mental state.
He was straight up Rain Man in that dugout with stats and like crazy stats. Like I have everything. I have a full page of notes here because I'm Snowman. You know, it's I got a blizzard going on in my brain, so it's got to be written down. He's Rain Man for some reason and can recall everything. And he was even saying like, yeah, I went around, I had a pep talk with some guys on how we need to attack Strowman here. And maybe it worked because Strowman typically pitches well against us. He's got good numbers against the Red Sox and he's got good numbers at Fenway Park. So we'll see. And I hate Strowman. So I you know, but anyway, let's we're getting late here. We're almost at an hour 10. Let me just run down the dishonorables. Tyler O'Neill, 2-for-10. Another golden sombrero. That's got to be his fifth or sixth one. That's a 4-strikeout game. So is what it is. Masataki Yoshida is still MIA, essentially. 1-for-7, just not really giving you anything as a DH. You have one job and he's not doing it. I don't know if we covered Dominic Smith's line, but he was 1-for-7. Dahlbeck 0-for-5, but like I said, he's not going anywhere. Bayo sucked, 4 2/3, 4 earned, 6 hits, 3 walks, just hot garbage this year. He could still turn it around, but it looks like it's going to be a bit of a project. I forget his first. Oh, Chase Anderson, 2 innings, 3 hits, 3 earned. It was a mop-up situation anyway. Scrolling down here, that about does it actually for the dishonorables. So not a ton, obviously, because we took 2 out of 3. Charlie's got a very intense look. He's very focused on something. But
I somehow pulled it out in fantasy baseball. I haven't checked all day since you mentioned it. And I was like, I wonder how my team is doing. You're mentioning all these stats.
Yeah, I was matched up against your dad, Charlie, and it looks like I'm going to win that one. Not by a wide margin, but I'll take any W at this point.
Gotta keep stacking wins.
Well, I'll be one game above 500 after this, but I'm in the final wild card spot. It's a pretty weak season this year in fantasy. And you're 7th, Charlie. So I don't know. Maybe you will. Well, how much did you win by this week?
Just 9-7. I only won by 2.
Okay. So I still got the 6th spot. I'm finally hitting again, but all right. That probably about does it.
Anything else that you gentlemen wanted to add? Nope. We will wrap there then. Thank you all for joining us for another episode. Hope everybody has a great day. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.